Today's daf is Mem Tet. We're going to go back to the Mishnah, Mem Chet and Mubet, read the beginning part that's relevant to our issue, and start from the Gemara there for today. Our Refuot Shleimo Tidvar Badina, Oz Avram Shuman Ben Chana, Karmi Banim, Orli Penina Baruch Hofrida Chayim, Alka Esther Bat Zipporah, Daniel Ben Mim Chayarut, Yosef Ben Rachele, Bat Rivka Rafal, Yoshua Chalek Ben Brachabati, Yenta Mirim Bat Chana Rachel, Yael Mirim Bat Chaya. Okay, we're continuing along the list of Tikkun Olam. We're going to have more today. Hanizakin shamin lehem beidit, ubalchov bebenonit, uktubat isha beziburit. Rabbi Meir omer ap ktubat isha bebenonit. Okay, so now we have this issue of what kind of land. Okay, we've learned this before, that there's three different types of land. There's the best, which is called the idit, the middle, which is the benonit, and then the bad land, which is the ziburit. Now you could have, let's say you owe someone 100 shekels, so you can give them 100 shekels worth of good land, 100 shekels worth of bad land, or 100 shekels worth of great land. So in the end, the value is always going to be the same, but the question is just from what type of land you have to pay the money from. So people would rather get 100 shekels worth of really good land than 100 shekels worth of bad land. Right? So the question is, when he needs to pay, now this obviously, somebody does nezek damages, he's supposed to pay you in money. This is only a case where he doesn't have money to pay you, and then he pays you in land. Okay, that's for starters to get. So nizakin is someone who causes damage to you, and he has to pay you back, and he doesn't pay you in money, so you come and you collect the property from the best of the land. We're going to get into each case and why this is as we get to the Gemara. The balchov bebenonit, okay, if you owe someone money, mostly from a loan is the main case they give, you lent money, you're supposed to give the money, you borrow money, you're supposed to give the money back, and you don't give it back, so the guy can come take it from your property, only from the benonit, not from the idit, but also he doesn't need to take it from the worst of the land. The woman, when she collects her ketubah, she collects it, there's a machloket, either from the ziburit, the worst of the land, or Rabbi Meir says from the benonit, from the middle. Okay, so now we're going to see, so all these things, right, we didn't read that part of the Mishnah, but we, you know, forgetting about all the other cases that we'll get to later, but all this is mipnei tikkun ha'olam. So now we're going to assume the first it's relating to the tikkun ha'olam of the nizakin. Okay, so the nizakin, if you do damages, you have to pay from the idit. So the Gemara says, mipnei tikkun ha'olam, why is this mipnei tikkun ha'olam? Doraita hi. It's a halacha midoraita. Dichtiv, meitav sadeh u'meitav karmo yishalem. It says in the Torah explicitly, if you cause damage to somebody else, okay, here's the pasuk, you can see it on your sheet. I put it further down because it more relates later. We're going to see it in the Gemara. But further down underneath one of the charts is the pasuk. Ki haver ish sadeh o kerem v'shilachat b'iro u'bi'er b'steh acher, meitav sadeh u'meitav karmo yishalem. Okay, if you make a fire and it goes in someone else's field, burns their field, you have to pay from the best of your land. So now it seems to be obvious. That's a halacha d'oraita. So what do you mean? The nizakin pay from the idit tikkun olam doesn't make any sense. So the answer is, Abai says, okay, first we're going to see the first answer. We're going to deal with that until we get to basically a mubet of memtet amubet, and then we're going to see a second answer. Okay, so keep it in mind. Our first answer is that lo tzricha ela l'Rabbi Yishmael de'amar, that this Mishnah is only according to Rabbi Yishmael's opinion. What did Rabbi Yishmael say? Damar midoraita bidinizach sheminam. Kamash malan mipnei tikkun olam sheminam bidimazik. What does he say? Yes, we pay from the best of the land. The question is best of whose land? Best of the land of the person who was damaged, or best of the land of the person who has to pay the money? So, according to Rabbi Yishmael, midoraita, you have to pay from the best of the land of the nizak. What does that mean? Okay, so here's a little chart here. Okay, you can see the little chart here. It says, let's say the mazik has better land than nizak. Okay, his land in general is better. So his worst land, his ziburit, is equal to the nizak, to the one who gets damaged, to his best land. So according to Rabbi Yishmael, what does the mazik, the person who damaged, have to pay? He only has to pay from his own land, from the ziburit, because meitav sadeh meitav karmo yishalem is referring to the one who is damaged. So you don't have to pay any more than his best land, the person you damaged. So if your worst land is equal to his best land, you can pay with your worst land. That's what Rabbi Yishmael says. So now, what's the tikkun olam? The tikkun olam is that you have to pay from your best land. Even if your best land is way better than his best land, you still, the tikkun olam is, you have to now pay, and as d'oraita, you only have to pay according to his best level. But now, midrash rabbanan, we added this tikkun olam that you have to pay from your best land. Okay? That's the tikkun olam according to Rabbi Ishmael.
When you smash into somebody's car, he gets to fix all his other scratches and everything that was surrounding the area of the accident.
So you're saying, is that the same? Because it's not really, though. Because, right. Okay. But, right. In other words, here you're saying we get extra. In other words, because we say that the person has to pay up his stuff, according to his level. So now they want to know, my Rabbi Ishmael, where do we see this opinion of Rabbi Ishmael? D'tanya, here's a braita. Meitav sadeh u'meitav karmo yishalem. Meitav sadeh u'shal nizak u'meitav karmo shal nizak. Divrei Rabbi Ishmael. There we have Rabbi Ishmael explicitly saying, the meitav sadeh u'meitav karmo is of the one who is damaged. Rabbi Akiva omer, lo baha katuv ela ligbot lenizakim mina idit. The pasuk, now this is a very strange lashon, okay, we're going to explain it the way we think it is, and then the Gemara is going to a little bit question that later, but in the end, it's going to be clear that that is what Rabbi Akiva holds. Rabbi Akiva says, no, that's not what the pasuk means. The pasuk means that we make the people pay from their own edit. Okay, if you look at the pasuk, by the way, what's the pshat? Look again at the pasuk. Ki av er ish sadeu kerem v'shilachet b'iro u'b'er b'stecher meitav sadeu meitav karmo yishalem. What's the pshat? His own, right? He has to pay from his own best land. Exactly, okay? It sounds like his own. So that's what Rabbi Akiva says. Now, the pasuk is clearly means what the pshat is, that he has to pay from his own best field. V'kal v'chomer lehekdesh. Okay, we're going to hold off on this for a minute, but we'll explain it very simply. Later, the Gemara is going to get into what is this kal v'chomer lehekdesh. But kal v'chomer, if you have to pay hekdesh, we don't know exactly what we mean by this hekdesh. Hekdesh always is things that are mukdash to the Bein HaMikdash. You also have to pay from the ED. Okay, we'll see what this means and why there's a kal v'chomer later on. So now, they're going to ask a question according to Rabbi Ishmael. There's a weird, I'd have to say, a strange assumption the Gemara is making right now. But we'll explain it in a minute. We're going to question Rabbi Ishmael's opinion. Now we're just going on a tangent off on it. We had our question on the Mishnah. Our question was, how could it be Mipnei Tikkun Olam? Isn't it D'oraita? Answer was, the Mishnah is like Rabbi Ishmael, who thinks that D'oraita, you only have to pay from the best of the one who is damaged. Tikkun Olam is, you have to pay from the best of the person who damaged you. Now, they're going to go into Rabbi Ishmael. Okay, so forget about our flow of where we are in the Gemara. We're going off on a tangent to understand Rabbi Ishmael better. Will Rabbi Ishmael, achal shmeina meshalem shmeina, achal kusha meshalem shmeina? According to this, if you ate good land, right, a lot of good fat fruits, let's say, you know, your animal came in and ate in somebody's field, so then you pay from the good land, obviously, because you have to pay meitav sadeu meitav karmo. But if you ate from bad fruits, then you're going to have to pay with good fruits. And the assumption the Gemara really thinks to say here, that let's say you ate 5 oranges in someone else's field. Let's say your animal went in and ate 5 oranges. So the assumption of the Gemara right now, which doesn't seem to be the assumption that we started with, is that instead of saying, well, what's the value of those 5 fruits? Okay, let's say it's valued at 20 shekels. So you have to pay 20 shekels worth of damage. And then you pay 20 shekels worth of damage from your best fruits, right? Let's say they were 5 measly oranges. Well, then you pay, you know, like maybe 4 really nice oranges. But the assumption here is that whatever you ate, that's what you pay back. So let's say you ate 5 oranges and they were measly oranges. So now the Gemara is asking, so you have to pay back now 5 beautiful oranges? It doesn't make any sense. It's not equal to the damage that you caused. Okay, so the Gemara has a strange underlying assumption here in this question. So Amar of Idi Bar Avin, Hacha B'maya Skinan. So to answer this question, it doesn't make sense that you should have to pay actually more than what you damaged. Rav Idi Bar Avin says, Hachi B'maya Skinan. What's the case here? Kigon she'achla aruga ben ha'arugot, v'lo yad'inan ikhusha achal ishmena achal. And then the mishalem maybe meitav. The point is that it's a case where you don't know whether you ate the best or the worst, and therefore you have to pay the best because maybe you actually did eat the best. So that, in other words, and his obvious assumption being that if you ate bad fruits, right, or measly fruits, then you'd only have to pay back measly fruits. You wouldn't have to pay mimetav in that case. So now Rebbe questions this and says, wait, this doesn't fit in with what? Our basic principles of dine sveikot and dine mamonot. What do we say always? Hamotzi mechavero alav haraya. If it's a suffix, we don't know whether you ate the great, the nice fruits or the not nice fruits. So what are we going to make you do, obviously? Unless you can prove that he damaged your nice fruits, hamotzi mechavero alav haraya, you have to prove it. And he only has to pay the smaller fruits. Okay, so that's what Rava's going to question. Amarava, ilu yadina de kusha achal mishalim kusha, hashta, if we knew he ate measly fruits, then obviously they'd only have to pay the measly ones. But hashta de lo yadina mishalim shmina. Hashta de lo yadina mishalim shmina, but if you don't know, you're going to make him pay the nice ones? Hamotzi mechavera alav haraya. The one who damages is the one who has to prove. The one who wants to take money out of the other one has to prove it. So therefore, until proven otherwise, it should be that you only have to pay the measly ones. And therefore, it can't be the case where it's a suffek and we don't know, because that goes into our general rules of sveikot, the hamotzi mechavero alav haraya. The one who was damaged would have to prove that they were the shmenim ones, the fatter ones, in order to get the shmenim ones. So therefore, that's not a good answer. So now we have a different answer. Ela amara vacha bar Yaakov, hacha b'mayas kinan, kigon shahaita idit diniza kiziburit mazik. Okay, what does that mean? What he's talking about is when, exactly what we talked about before, the idit of the person damaged, he obviously has less good property, and his best property is equal to the worst property of the mazik. And that's the case where you pay only according to the basic halacha before the Tikkun Olam came in. Then, according to Rabbi Yishmael, you would pay the mazik would only have to pay the ziburit of his property because it's equal to the idit of the other person's property. So then, in that case, that's where the machloket is. So Rabbi Yishmael sabar bidinizak shayminan. We evaluate the value of the property, how much you have to pay, based on the idit of the one who was damaged, which in this case is only equal to the ziburit of the wealthier guy who did the damage. And Rabbi Akiva savar bidemazik shayminan. Rabbi Akiva says, no, it goes by, even if the other person's best land is equal to your worst land, you still have to pay from your best land, because that's the halacha. So now they're going to each prove it from the pasuk. My time at Rabbi Yishmael, where does he learn that it all goes by the nizak? What does it mean, lamata lamala? It means within that same pasuk, the word sadeh appears twice. Okay, where does it appear? Look again at the pasuk. Ki yaver ish sadeh. Okay, it's underneath this chart here. Ki yaver ish sadeh o kerem. Whose sadeh is that? If you burn someone else's field. Who's the field? The field is the one who is damaged. So now when it says later on in the pasuk, Meitav Sadeh or Meitav Karmel Yishalem, it must be referring to the same person whose field we were referring to before. And since the subject there was the Nizak, that Sadeh, this Sadeh is also going to be the Nizak. So even though we said that the Pshat seems to imply Meitav Sadehu, his own field he has to pay the best of, and it sounds like the Mazik, where Rabbi Yishmael is saying, no, but from the beginning of the Pasuk, we see the Sadeh is the one who is damaged, and therefore, we're going to assume Masadeh Amor Alamala is the Nizak, therefore also the Sadeh Amor Alamata, later on in the Pasuk, is the Nizak.
The Pshat of the Pasuk could also be read differently.
Yeah, okay, so we're going to see in a minute. So now, it's definitely not the Pshat. What he's using is Gzeirah Shavah.
Right.
He's using a different principle of than Pshat. Pshat would read for sure the way Rabbi Akiva holds, which is the mazik. But what he's saying is there's a gzeirah shavah. Okay, we're going to take what's true for one is true for the other. So now, Rabbi Akiva savar, meitav sadeh yishalem, dehaf takai mishalem. Right? Who's meitav sadeh? Who is he paying from? He's paying from, obviously, from his own. Right? And he's saying that's the pshat of the pasuk. So now, Rabbi Yishmael is going to have to explain how does he read the pshat then. Rabbi Yishmael, ahane gzeirah shavah v'ahane kra. He says, I can use both principles, both the gzeirah shavah and the pshat of the pasuk. How? Ahane gzeirah shavah l'chida amaran. Okay, that I already explained, the gzeirah shavah. The gzeirah shavah explains that it's like the nizak. Ahanekra, how does the pasuk, when does the pshat of the pasuk apply that you pay from the mazik? De'i itle lemazik idit v'ziburit, v'ziburit dide lo shavya ki idit denizak, mishalem li mimetav. Okay, what's the case? Look at the little chart I put inside that chart. You see with the Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Akiva chart there? So if the mazik has idit and ziburit land, okay, and then the nizak has idit land, now their idit land is right in between. You see that from the chart? Their idit land is better than the ziburit, but it's worse than the person's idit. So now, what do you say? What kind of land does he have to pay? In other words, we're assuming he has only two types of fields, idit and ziburit, but it falls right in between. So you might say, according to what we said before, will it go, you know, maybe we only have to pay the ziburit. So comes Rabbi Yishmael and he says, no, when does he have to pay? Meitav sadeo, meitav karmo. When he doesn't have land that matches up, and he has to go up a level. In other words, he doesn't go down a level to a ziburit, he has to pay up a level. So that's the case where he uses the pshat of the pasuk. Because if you notice, his case worked only depending on, right, the nizak is when the nizak's land is worth worse than the mazik. Here's a case where it's kind of in between, okay, where he doesn't have land that matches up exactly. So now, okay, Rabbi Akiva. Now we're going to go back to Rabbi Akiva. So that was all to explain Rabbi Yishmael. Now we're going to explain Rabbi Akiva's opinion. Rabbi Akiva, here's his quote from the Braita we saw earlier. Lo baha katuv ela ligbot l'nizaki min ha'idit v'kavachomer lehekdesh. So the first line we understand, right? It means he has to take it from his own land, from the mazik. Kavachomer lehektesh. So my kavachomer lehektesh. What case are we making kavachomer lehektesh? What case of hektesh is it? Ilema dinag chetora didan letora dehektesh. Let's say there was a shore of hektesh. Someone was makdish a shore to the Beit HaMikdash. And your shore came along and damaged the shore of hektesh. So now, if you remember the psukim by the nezek there of the shore, what does it say in the pasuk? Shor re'ehu. Okay, here's the pasuk. Ki yigov shor ish et shor re'ehu vamet. It has to be your friend's shor. Now, your friend always comes to exclude hektesh cases. Hektesh isn't your friend. Hektesh is God. Right? It's like almost like, you know, you sometimes say to your kids, I'm not your friend, right? There's a certain relationship there, right? Your friend is not God. God, Beit HaMikdash, that's a different area. So that's excluded from this pasuk, meaning... So shor re'ehu amar rachmana v'lo shor shel hektesh. So therefore, if your shor damages the shor of hektesh, you don't pay nezek according to this. So therefore, it can't possibly be that they mean if you're paying damages for something that you destroyed of hektesh, because you don't have to pay if your shor damages another shor of hektesh. We're going to see that there's another opinion about it. It does sound strange that you'd be patur from this. We're going to see that there's an opposing opinion. But right now, that's what they're holding up by. So then it must be, Ela, lo'omer, hare alai maneh lebet kabayit. What say you say, I'm going to give a maneh to bet kabayit, right, a certain amount of money, and you give the money in property. So now the question is, again, like we said from the beginning, if you have to give 100 shekels worth of property, you say, right, you said I'm just giving 100 shekels worth, but now when you go to give to hektesh, where are you going to give it from? From 100 shekels worth of great land or 100 shekels worth of poor land or benoni land? So now the kavachomer lehektesh is going to be, oh, when you say I'm giving X amount to hektesh and you're paying with your land, you have to pay from the best of your land. That actually makes sense that you would make a kavachomer then. Right, because hektesh is better than a random person, right? So therefore, that's what they're assuming right now. So,
it doesn't really make sense because superior land, if you're translating it into money, translating it into damages is different. Translating it into money, a smaller amount of superior land would be equal to a mana. You'd need a lot more inferior land.
Yes, you would. You would. No, so that's the point. The point is people would rather have a smaller amount of very good land than a larger amount of poor land. That's for sure. In other words, again, we're not talking about a certain size of small land versus a certain size of large land. Of poor land. It's definitely that you're giving either a small piece of really good land or a big piece of poor land. That's for sure the comparison. So the question is just when you say, I'm giving something to hektesh, do you have to give it from the best of your land? A smaller piece, but the best of your land. That's always the tricky part with the value here, because a value is more, it's multidimensional, right? It's not just the value of how much this is worth. The question is more, what's the future worth of it almost, right? Because good land is going to produce a lot more stuff than poor land.
Doesn't that get folded into the size that you're talking about?
So it does. It does. But in the end, people would rather, if you want to give away, right, think about it. If you were giving away things to people, you're obviously going to prefer to give away X amount of stuff you don't care so much about rather than X amount, you know, a smaller amount, but of your good stuff.
A studio on Fifth Avenue versus a three-bedroom on First. Seriously, that's how I was thinking about it.
Right. Yeah, studio on Fifth Avenue versus a, right, an apartment on Fourth. Right.
Who evaluates?
Like, so that's right. The Beijing obviously would be the ones evaluating, or maybe there were people whose job it was to be evaluators. But the Beijing probably had messengers, you know, and that was their
shamai.
People, right? The shamai, exactly, like nowadays.
But also some of it was probably natural market forces.
Yeah, obviously the market forces affected things for sure. So you know, fluctuated. Okay, so now they think that that's going to be the explanation. Okay, so now they're going to say though. So Ella Omer Harela Manela Bedekabayit. Ati Gizbar Veshakam Iidi. Right. Let's say you say I'm going to give a Manela Bedekabayit. You don't give the money. So the Gizbar comes, and what does he do? When he seizes your property to pay up for what you committed, so he can seize it from the Iidit. But then they say no. That doesn't make any sense because Lo Yehei Ella Bal Chov. The Gizbar is just like a Bal Chov basically because he's someone who's owed money. Right. He's the representative of the Beit HaMikdash. He's owed money, and he comes to collect the money that you haven't paid. And what did we say about a Baal Chov? Baal Chov bebeinonit. V'chi tema kasavar Rabbi Akiva Baal Chov shakel be'idit kenizakin. And if you want to say that maybe Rabbi Akiva holds that a Baal Chov takes the idit like the nizakin, ika lemifrach, you can make, even if you would say that Rabbi Akiva would hold that a regular Baal Chov can take from Idit, which we don't know, but let's suggest. See, he disagrees with our Mishnah, because remember, our Mishnah said, Baal Chov b'meinui. But let's suggest that Rabbi Akiva maybe would hold that a Baal Chov would go back from the Idit. In which case, the Hekdesh is also go back from the Idit. But now he's going to say, you can't prove that, because even if he holds a Baal Chov, let's say he does hold, a Baal Chov would be go back from the Idit. You can't necessarily learn from there to the Hekdesh, because Hekdesh, even though we say Hekdesh, oh, it's in a higher Madriga, but Hekdesh has a unique kula by it that we just learned, that what? That the Hekdesh, if a shur is, you know, hits, kills, or damages, you're a shur of Hekdesh, you're pater. So therefore, they're going to say it has this kula aspect, and you can't make this kal v'chomer that we tried to make. So here we'll explain. Ika lemifrach, we'll read it inside. Ma la baal chov sheken yafe kocho benizakin. A regular baal chov is like a regular person, and his koch, right? He's when it comes to nizakin, he'd have to pay the edit, and he has to pay damages. Tomar behekdesh sheken hura kocho benizakin. Sorry, the opposite. If he gets damaged, he gets paid back, right? That's the strength of a regular Baal Chov. If you damage his property, he has to pay you back. But Tomar behekdesh, shekein hura kocho benizakin. But when it comes to Hekdesh, he can't get damages paid to him. Therefore, he's worse than a regular Baal Chov. So even if you were to say, where did the markers go? Over there. Even if you were to say that the nizakin, that a regular Baal Chov could get idit, and maybe that's Rabbi Akiva's opinion, and from there he learns the kal v'chomer to Hekdesh. You can't make kal v'chomer because Hekdesh has a kula. What's his kula? That if you damage the Hekdesh, you don't have to pay. Your shur damages the shur of Hekdesh. So therefore, you can't make that kal v'chomer. So therefore, we're stuck with trying to figure out what is this kal v'chomer to Hekdesh, he's saying. We said it can't be if the shore damages the other shore, because there's no such thing, right? And that would be the obvious comparison, because that's what the Mishnah was talking about, nizakin. It can't be if you said, I'm giving this to Hekdesh, and the Gizbar comes to take it from you, that he seizes it from your best property, because that doesn't make any sense. So now, what are we going to say? La'olam, we're going to go back to the first interpretation. Dinat chetorah didan la'torah de Hekdesh. It is where the shore gores your shore, a shore of Hekdesh. Rabbi Akiva sabar like Rabbi Shimon ben Menasya. He holds like a unique opinion here. What does Rabbi Shimon ben Menasya hold? Tanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Menasya omer. Shor shel hekdesh, anagach l'shor shel hedyot, patur. If a shor of hekdesh gores an ox of hedyot, he's patur. But shel hedyo nagach l'shor shel hektesh bein tam ubein mu'ab mishalem nezek shalem. This goes sits better with everybody. Okay, and I can see that you were frustrated. What do you mean your ox can go kill a hektesh, you know, or hurt a hektesh shor and not have to pay damages? So now it works the opposite. If you have a shor of hektesh, the damage is a regular shor, well, then you don't have to pay, because that's hektesh to a regular shor. But when it's the opposite, then it's more chamor. It's that you even, okay, what's, who remembers shor tam, shor muad? Shor tam is if the ox has only hit someone once or twice. Once he hits three times, he turns into a shor muad. So the shor tam only have to pay half the damages. Shor muad has to pay full damages. So here you have it, that no matter what, he has to pay full damages if he damages the shor of hektesh, because the shor of hektesh is considered higher value. And it's also, it's excluded from the pasuk that there's no, in, to the sense that there's no distinction between shor muad and shor tam. But it's included in the fact that you obviously do have to pay damages. Okay, so therefore, Rabbi Akiva is talking about kol shekein if you damage a shor of hektesh, and now it makes total sense. Because the shor of hektesh doesn't even have a distinction shor muad, shor tam. So obviously it's going to be more chamor, so if you damage him, you're obviously going to have to pay edid, just like you have to pay the edid for the other shor. Okay? So now, ihachi, mimai, so now we're going to have another question on this. Here's going to be a different explanation of the machloket between them. Ihachi mimai debi edid denizak hiziburit demazik plige. If you're saying that Rabbi Akiva is saying this kavachomer dehektesh to show I hold like Rabbi Shimon ben Manasya, then maybe we've misunderstood the entire machloket between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael. Maybe the machloket isn't b'demazik shayminan or b'denizak shayminan. Is it by the mazik or the nizak? Maybe the whole machloket is, do we hold like Rabbi Shimon ben Manasya or not when it comes to hektesh? Okay, it's a strange, we're going to reject it immediately. It's a strange suggestion, but if you notice, look back, you can even just look on the sheet here. In the very beginning of the sheet, okay, the second chart, has the words of Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva in the Braita. It doesn't say, right, what is, Rabbi Yishmael says, Meitav Sadeh Shal Nizak, or Meitav Karmo Shal Nizak. So I think that the Havamina of the Gemara now comes from the fact that it doesn't say, Rabbi Akiva says, he doesn't say, Meitav Sadeh Shal Mazik, or Meitav Karmo Shal Mazik, which would have been the obvious way to split this, right, to say this machloket. He says it in a different way, and he says, lo ba katuv ela ligbot l'nizakim min ha'idit, which isn't exactly clear that he means that we do it by the mazik, v'kal v'chomer l'hektesh. So what they're suggesting now is maybe he only means to say that when it comes to hektesh, I think you pay damages, right, from the idit, as opposed to Rabbi Yishmael, who doesn't think you pay at all to hektesh. So, again, it's not really the pshat, it's not really a great explanation. They're going to reject it immediately, but that's their suggestion right now. So they say, Ihachi mimai debi idit dinizak ziburita mazik plige. Why are you assuming that the machloket is specifically in this case, right, of this little chart over here, where the idit of the nizak is like the ziburit of the mazik, and that's the place they're arguing about? Dilma dekule alma bedinizak shemina. Maybe they all agree that it's bedinizak. Vahacha beplukta drabi shem bemanasi rabban and kami plige. Maybe that's what they're arguing about. Do we hold like Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh or not? Do Rabbi Akiva sever like Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh? Rabbi Yishmael sever like a Rabbanan? Then the Gemara says, no, you can't possibly say that. Because number one, we're going to have three questions. Number one, my lo baha katuv. What does it mean, lo baha katuv? Lo baha katuv means, I disagree with your reading of the pasuk. If he disagrees with his reading of the pasuk, what's he basically saying? That the pasuk reads like the pshat, that it's metav sadeh o metav kamo of the mazik. That's the first thing. Because he words it as, you're misreading the pasuk. That's what loba katuv, right? You're misreading the pasuk. He obviously disagrees and thinks it is b'demazik. Number two, ve'od my kal v'chomer lehektesh. According, if we say the machloket is really, do we hold a Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh or not, what's really the main issue of the main topic they're fighting about is hektesh. Here, it's just an add-on, v'kal v'chomer lehektesh, right? But it should be that that's the main topic of their thing, not as an add-on. So that also doesn't make sense. The ode, and here's going to be the best proof. Ha'amar Rav Ashi brought a braita, Tanya Behedya, and in that braita it says explicitly, exactly the way we would have expected the machloket to be written, and here it says it, Meitav sadeh u'meitav karmo yishalem. Here's the machloket. Meitav sadeh u'shal nizak u'meitav karmo shal nizak, divrei Rabbi Yishmael, right? He says it's by the one who is damaged. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Meitav Sadeh Shal Mazik, Meitav Karmo Shal Mazik. There we have it explicitly. So now we have no concerns that maybe that's not exactly what they were arguing about. Maybe they were arguing about Rav Shimon ben Manasseh only. No, they were arguing about, is it Mazik or is it Nizak? Okay? Tov. That was all, remember, how did we get here? We started with our Mishnah. Our Mishnah said the Nizakin paid from the Idit. Mipnei Tikkun Olam. The Gemara said, what do you mean Mipnei Tikkun Olam? It's Doraita. They said, oh no, it's according to Rabbi Ishmael. Rabbi Ishmael holds that in the case where the Nizak has poor quality land, we pay by the Idit of the Nizak, right? And the Tikkun Olam is that now we pay against the Doraita, we pay by the value of the Mazik. Basically, he agrees with Rabbi Akiva from the Tikkun Olam perspective, right? Once you have the Tikkun Olam, then everyone agrees that it's Bida Mazik. That was one explanation of understanding this. Now Ravina is going to come up with a different one. Ravina Amar La'olam Matnitin Rabbi Akiva Hi Da'amar Midoraita B'demazik Shemina. Okay, the Mishnah is like Rabbi Akiva, who holds his B'demazik. But Rabbi Shimon Hi D'darish Tama D'kra. It's according to Rabbi Shimon, who's D'darish Tama D'kra, which means Uma Ta'am Ka'amar Ma Ta'am Hanizakin Shamin Lahem B'idit Mipnei Tikkun Olam. What are we saying here? It's Mipnei Tikkun Olam, but what we're saying is the De'oraita Halacha was instituted because of Tikkun Olam. Okay, right? We've been viewing Tikkun Olam until now as a takana that the rabbis instituted in order to prevent problems, issues, whatever it might be. Now we're saying no. De'oraita is B'demazik, like Rabbi Akiva says, but the Doraita was instituted because of Tikkun Olam, which is very interesting to be said, right? Which makes sense according to our worldview that the Torah is supposed to also be Mitaken Olam, right? So that's what he's saying. Detanya, how do we see this? Because I'm a Rabbi Shimon. Here, this goes according to Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Shimon appears in a Braita saying exactly this. Mipnei ma amru anizakin shamin lahem b'idit, mipnei gazlanim and mipnei chamsanin. Why do we say that the nizakin get to pay idit? Because of Gazlanim and Chamsanim, because there's bad, basically, right? Because there's evil in the world and bad people who will do bad things. Kedeshi Omar Adam, Lama Ani Gozel, the Lama Ani Chomes. It doesn't pay for me to rob. It doesn't pay for me to steal. Lemachar Beidin Yordim Lenechasav, Inotlim Sadena Esheli. Right? They're going to come and take my best field if I, right? In other words, if I steal this, they're going to come and take my... Now, obviously, this only works for Gazlanim and Chamsanim that actually have fields, property. Right? It's not everybody own property. But the point is that if you do own property... Anyway, this whole thing is only for people who own property because obviously you can't go take something from someone who doesn't have property from their best land if they don't have best land. So they're basically saying it's a disincentive clause, right? It doesn't pay to rob because you're going to lose your best land. That's why they do it.
It's only land. It's not others. It's not
metal. No, it's not metaltalin. It's just land.
And why was the Mishnah allowed to go against the Torah?
No, the Mishnah goes with the Torah. The Mishnah is saying it's b'nei tikkun olam, you pay from the best. Right? If you do damage, you have to pay from the best of your land.
But the original people are saying you don't. You can go from the average land and the worst land.
The original people, meaning before the tikkun olam.
Yes.
This approach is saying that the Mishnah is describing why the Torah made it be that way. The Torah said you pay from the Idit as a disincentive clause to prevent people from robbing.
But it's on a Torah level, that's
why I'm saying we're taking Tikkun Olam out of the context that we've understood until now that the rabbis instituted it. According to this interpretation, it's the Torah. And the Mishnah is just coming to tell you why did the Torah do this. The Torah did it to prevent people from stealing in the future.
That weakens this a little bit.
That weakens this, yes. That weakens, what do you mean, sorry, what do you mean it weakens
the
it?
The line of the Gemara until now.
Oh, we have a totally different, right. This was one line, and now we're on a second line. These are two totally different explanations, yes.
But okay. It doesn't answer the first question of Doraita.
It does, because it is Doraita.
Correct.
So it's answering it and saying, this is Doraita. What the Mishnah is doing is giving a reason for the Doraita.
Correct. You basically changed the term Tikkun Olam.
Yes.
More inclusive could be after.
Well, it means the same thing. It's just a different time period, right? It's describing why did the Torah do it. Right.
Or changing what's Doraita.
Well, it's not changing. No, Doraita stays the same. The Doraita is the same. You pay from the way the Peshat was. Metav Sadeh, Metav Kermoshele. The whole question is, why did the Torah say you have to pay from the best of your land in this case? Very obviously, because the Torah wants to just deter people from stealing. Lo shavelach, right? Don't steal.
Until now we were talking about damage.
Yafeh. So they mean, right, so it's true. They do jump here to stealing, whereas damages, especially if you're sure damages someone else, it's not like you sent your sure to go damage someone else. But again, be more careful. The whole issue, the reason why you're responsible is you're responsible for your animals. Take care, because if you don't watch it, you're gonna end up having to pay from your best field. It's just general, right? Here, why did we jump? Okay, I'll tell you why we jumped. Because this is Rabbi Shimon, who's not talked it, right? This is a totally different source we're taking. We're taking him and saying, this explains our source. That's what they're doing. Okay. So now we're going to see, okay, he's going to go through all the cases of our mission and explain what the logic is, why with the ketubah you pay from the ziburit, and why with the balchov you pay with the beinonit. Okay, so first we're going to continue. I didn't read the end here. V'somchim ha-masha ketub b'torah, mitav tzadeh u'mitav karmo yishalem. Lefichach, amru ha-nizakin shamin lehem b'idit. Right? And it goes according with the pshat, the pasuk, and that's why the nizakin shamin lehem b'idit. Mipnei ma'amru b'alcho b'beinonit, kedei shelo yir'e adam l'chaviro tzadeh na'e, v'dira na'e, v'dira na'a, v'yomar ekpot v'alavenu kedei she'egvenu b'chovi. What's the issue? Let's say you see your friend has this great property and you want to get that property. So what do you say? Right? This is, again, these are all to prevent from people who really are evil, right? What will they do? They'll say, I'm going to lend this guy money. And then in the event that he doesn't pay me back, I can come take his great field or his great house. So why don't I do that? Let me lend him money. Hope that he won't pay me back. I'll come and I'll go get it from his best land. So we don't want to allow people to do that. So what are we going to say? A balchol can't go back from the edit because we don't want people, right? There's, again, this concern always of, you know, the worst that people can do with things. So then they say, well, elameata yeh b'ziburit. So then we should make it the worst. So they won't say, oh, this guy has a benonit property that I want. So then what's the obvious reason? Im kena tano el delip ifnei lovin. You have the other issue that if you know that you can only collect it back from the poor land, well then it's a disincentive to loan money. And that we've seen before from Prusval, right? That's already an issue that people don't want to lend money, so we want to prevent that from happening. Ketubat isha b'ziburit. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Meir omer b'beinonit. So now we're going to relate to this. So there's a machloket whether it's ziburit or beinonit. Amar Rabbi Shimon, again, Rabbi Shimon's giving the reason. We're still in the same braita. Mipnei ma'amru ketubat isha b'ziburit. Here's our best line, okay? She yoter mima sha'ish rotze lisa, ha'isha rotze linase. Women would always much prefer to be married than men. And therefore, right, we don't need to provide incentive for the woman. We don't need to make it that the woman has to get paid back the best of the land from her ketubah money because she wants to get married anyway. So she'll suffice with even the lowest of the land. Okay, and what's the opposite? We want the man, since the man, we're less concerned about him getting married and he has to commit this financial commitment, we want to make it easier for him to commit the financial commitment. We've seen this before. We want to make it simpler for him to commit. So we're going to say, oh, well, you only have to pay back with your ziburit of land. And that way he'll be willing to give the wife the ketubah and marry her. Okay, this is obviously, like we've explained many times, right? This is within a historical context. People might argue that today it's true also. You can take it. I still remember, right? There's another line like this in Kiddushin. Tov lemeitav tan duma lemeitav or melo, that a woman would always rather be living with someone than living by herself. And it means obviously a marriage, not just, you know, with someone else. I remember learning it in high school. It was always one of those lines you never forget, especially when you learn it in high school. But anyway, it's one of those lines that you have to look at from a historical perspective somewhat.
Or Disney princesses.
Or someone, right. Or Disney princesses or, you know, or, you know, those typical stereotypes that people say of men and women. Okay, davar acher. Now, this is a very confusing line. The Gemara is going to say, what is this davar acher? What does it have to do with? It seems from the pshat that what are they going to tell us? Another reason why the ketubat isha is b'ziburit. But it's not. And that's why it's going to be very confusing. Davar acher, isha yotza lirtzona v'shelo lirtzona. So now they're going to describe another difference between men and women as relates to marriage. What's the other difference? We've learned this before, that the woman can get a get willingly or unwillingly. She doesn't have to be a willing participant until when? Historically, until Takanat Rabbeinu Gershom, who instituted that the woman has to be a willing part of a get. And that's why, as we talked about, there's a Hetramei Rabbanim, where they can be matir, the Takanat Rabbeinu Gershom, if there's a case where a woman's refusing to accept her get. Whereas the man, right? The man can't, right? She can't. He must be a willing, right? He must give her the get willingly. And that's why we always have problems of Mesurevet get. So now the Gemara says, my davar acher, what does this davar acher have anything to do with? V'chitema ki hechid ki mafik la'iu tkino le'rabanan k'tuba minyei ki nafke iu nami litachne le'rabanan k'tuba minya. This is a fascinating havamina. You might have thought, okay, it's fascinating to view in a historical context, because what are they saying? You might have thought that just like if the man divorces the woman, he has to give her a ketubah. Likewise, if the woman chooses to divorce the man, she'd have to give him a ketubah. Okay, right? It's so hard for us to think about because we're so used to, right? But it's interesting in the context that they would even suggest such a thing, because women didn't generally own their own money, and they didn't, right? It's just interesting havamina. So therefore, Tashma, therefore it comes to teach us, why is the ketubah one-sided, that it's the husband's commitment to the woman? Because Yisha yotza l'rtzona v'shelo l'rtzona. V'aish eino motzi ela l'rtzono. In other words, in the end, right, efshar demashe la begita. In other words, he can push off giving the get if he wants, because in the end, he has to be the willing participant of the get. And that's why she doesn't give him a ketubah, but he gives her a ketubah. Okay, that's why it's one-sided. Tubati shabziburit. Amar marzutra bereid Rav Nachman. Lo amaran ela miyatme. Aval minei didei bebeinonit. All of a sudden, marzutra comes and says, don't understand this as a pshat of the Mishnah. When the Mishnah says, tubati shabziburit, that's only what? When, there's two cases where she collects. One is where the husband divorces her, and then he's usually there, unless she hasn't collected it, and then the husband dies in the interim. Or the husband dies, and then she's collecting from the atonement. So there's two possible cases she can collect from the atonement. Or he divorced her, and she just hasn't collected her ketubah yet, and he dies. But either which way, when does she collect from the ziburit? Only when she's collecting from the atonement. But from him, she collects from the beinonit. So they say, wait, this doesn't make any sense, because my iriak tubad isha, afilu kol mi le'nami, tahatnan, eine for imi nichse yatomim elemen ziburit. We know a Mishnah that says that nobody collects from Yatomim except from the Ziburit. Again, these are these protective measures they made for Yatomim. The Yatomim, no matter what it is, you could be claiming damages from the Yatomim, anything you're claiming from them, from the father's, you know, the father's debts he left over, the Yatomim only have to pay from Ziburit. So therefore, it's not a unique halacha that the Ketubah Isha is gover from the Ziburit if anyone's gover from the Ziburit from the Yatomim. So therefore, it doesn't make sense to say it's miyatomim, so we're going to reject Rav Zutra and say, elalav minei, minei. Okay, so therefore it must be minei. So then they say, no, we can explain it anyway, the way he says. La'olam miyatme, it is from yatomim. Uktubat isha itzirichale. But there's a unique halacha about ketubat isha that you might have thought that it would be an exception to the rule. In other words, everyone has to go back from the yatomim, from the ziburit, and even the woman. Why even the woman? Because you might have thought, we've seen this before, that in order, and we saw the two different interpretations, in order either to make it attractive for the woman to get married in the first place, we want to make sure she knows she can collect properly, and you might have thought that we would allow her to get the ketubah from the beinonit, even from yatomim, okay, but then the rejection of that opinion was that but women always want to get married, so therefore it's not that. What is it? It's after she gets divorced from the first husband, we want to make it easy for her to collect her ketubah so that, or get have her get better property so that she can get remarried. She'll be attractive to another man because she'll have property and money with her, and it'll be easier for her to get remarried. So because of that, you might have thought that they were mekel and allow the woman, even though no one else can collect from the ziburit from the yatomim, the woman would be. But no, kamash malan, that not. Okay. Amar Rava, Tashma, Rabbi Meir Omer Ketubat Isha Bebeinonit. So now, Rava says, no, well, let's learn it from here. Rabbi Meir says the Ketubat Isha is Bebeinonit. He disagrees. So now again, Miman. Ilem Amiyatme, Leile the Rabbi Meir. It's one thing, if we're saying that this is all about being gover from the atonement, so now we have a question of Rabbi Meir. How could Rabbi Meir say that she's gover from the atonement from the Beinonit? Leile the Rabbi Meir, Hadetana, and if we're going to say atonement, Elam and Iziburit? Elalav minei, therefore Rabbi Meir must mean she's collecting from the husband. If that's the case, michlal d'rabbanan sabrei b'ziburit, then it must be that the chachamim say that she's collecting from the husband, b'ziburit. So then they say, lo, la'olam miyatme, ushanik tubat isha mishum chinah. Okay, we'll end here for today. What are they saying? That really what they mean is she's we could still explain that she's collecting for the atonement. Remember, Rabbi Meir's chiddush is exactly what we rejected before, which is that he thinks that mishum chila we were mekel by the woman, and we allow her to collect from zibari because of the reason of china. Okay, so what we've had until now, okay, I'm just preparing you for what's going to be tomorrow. That the explanation of Marzutra is that it's only collecting from Yatomim. That's what we're referring to. Okay? And then Rabbi Meir would say it's a unique halacha by women of Tshuvat Isha that she can collect from the Beinonit even though no one else can. And the other opinion is saying, no, that she can't. Okay, there's no shiur tomorrow. I'll be away, and we'll pick up again on Tuesday.